Most people have good intentions, but few people practice intentionality. Greetings from Charlotte, North Carolina, for another edition of Insights on Intentionality with Coach K. On this podcast, we conduct interviews, answer questions, and provide insights on the intentional way. On this episode, my special guest is Coach John Zeller from SCORE International. Coach, welcome to the podcast.
I appreciate it. It's good to be here, Jeff, and be with you, Coach, as well.
Well, Coach is in town doing some speaking engagements in the Charlotte area. We had a chance to break some bread with another ministry leader today, and I want to take a few moments and get caught up with what's been going on. For those of you not familiar with SCORE International, you're the executive director. Tell us about the scope and ministry of SCORE International.
Well, SCORE is started in 1984. We exist as our mission statement is to glorify God in missions through obedience to the Great Commission. And that's what we try to do and what we've been doing. Started by Coach Ron Bishop, who had an impact in both our lives, Jeff. And we are engaged people, short-term mission trips. We started out as a sports ministry, but now we're really a full sending mission organization. We're just not sports. We still do that. But out of 5,500 people that traveled last year on short-term trips, only 12% of them were athletes. So we do a lot of things. And we work mainly in the Caribbean, Central America. We do a lot of domestic ministry now. And we are in five different countries in South America. So we engage people to come alongside the missionary who feels called on the field, as well as local pastors, local churches.
One of the things I was noticing recently on a Facebook post that you were putting together some trips to go help out with, as we're taping this podcast, Hurricane Michael has just come up through Florida, then obviously Hurricane Florence to the Carolinas. And so even you guys were adopting some of these domestic mission trips, giving people a chance to engage there.
Yeah, and we're sitting here in your hometown in Charlotte, Coach, and yet we, you know, places into Wilmington, Morehead City, into those places. We've been in Morehead City for a number of years, and so we want to organize trips and help people. People want to say, how can I help? I want to do something. We provide the boots on the ground to help get that. And one of the things that we do, too, in our ministry, we always try to partner up with the local church and the local pastor, because we can go in there for a week and we're gone. And yet, you know, what does that do for the church and what does that do for the pastor other than put on a big show? We don't want to do that. We want to encourage people to get along. But right now, the biggest thing we can do, one of our core values is to express the gospel through acts of kindness. That's a core gospel of SCORE. Hey, this is a great way. People need food. They need water. They need ice. They need cleanup. I mean, we've all seen the pictures, whether it be the Eastern North Carolina, the flooding, or the tragedy in Panama City and the hurricane there. So people need a lot of help. And we can express the gospel by meeting needs through that. So I'd say get on our website, www.scoreintl.org, scoreintl.org, and look at our domestic trips. You can get involved.
I tell leaders all across America that too often we're expecting people to walk through our turnstiles on our local church campuses, our ministry groups, and we're not getting out there on the front lines and getting on their turf. Mm-hmm. And SCORE International will take people out, get on people's turf, have a chance to go where Jesus would go and do what Jesus would do.
That's so true. Jeff, I have a little mantra that I run with. Christians ought to be nice guys. Just be a nice guy. Everybody likes a nice guy. You know, the guy that next door neighbor that always has a tool for you. The guy that always say, don't worry about it, I can help you with that. We ought to be nice guys. And so in times of tragedy, in times of problems and issues, the weather damages, just be a nice guy. A bottle of water, bag of ice. You know, nobody cares how much you know to. They know how much you care, all that. But just be a nice guy, and what you'll earn with that is the platform that you can share who you are and who Jesus Christ is to make you that nice guy.
Amen. Tremendous. Well, listen, I was in the state of Pennsylvania recently conducting a men's retreat. That's your home state, though you grew up mostly in the state of Ohio. So tell us about John Zeller growing up, the young man, and your God story, how you came to Christ.
Well, I grew up in a Christian home. I don't know anything. I'm the guy that was going to church 9 months before I was born. My dad and mom, there was one basic rule, and that was you got to go to church. And they were born-again believers, too. Both my dad and mom were raised by alcoholic parents during the Depression. If you know any of that history, that meant they really had nothing. Both got shipped out as middle schoolers in the homes because the parents were alcoholics, couldn't take care of them. And then later on, their parents kind of got brought their families back together. So that was my... Grew up around, born in Ephrata, grew up around Lebanon, Pennsylvania, grew there, lived there for 12 years, almost 13. Moved to Alexandria, Virginia during the, remember the Titan days. I lived that movie because I was the first white kid to ever play football at all-black junior high.
Wow.
And that was during that time that T.C. Williams came out. I was seventh grade, and then by the time I got to the ninth grade, T.C. Williams got started. So I lived that movie. I knew what it was like, and those were rough days. But I accepted Christ in Pennsylvania as a nine-year-old boy. I remember a guy came in one day, and he preached on hell and heaven, and for God's Holy Spirit drew me to him. I went forward to the old-fashioned altar where you knelt, and the pastor came down the road, and he asked me, "What do you want?" I said, "I want to be saved." And he said, "Okay, you got to ask Jesus to come in your heart, forgive you of your sins." He did that. Saved me. Moved to Southern Ohio for my last 3 years of high school, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. And lived. My dad was at a Bible school. He was studying to become a pastor. He started planting churches. And so that's the life I had. Went to Tennessee Temple in 71. Thought it was the only Christian college in America. Wanted to play baseball. And they gave me a little scholarship. And I went down there and played. Played 4 years of soccer, 4 years of baseball, because when I grew up in Pennsylvania, all my brothers played high school soccer. There wasn't high school football in those rural communities. So I grew up around soccer, and I just went down to Tennessee Temple and said, "I'm going to try out." Sure enough, tried out and played, loved it, had great experience, influenced my life, got into coaching, coached 31 years, and here I am, executive director of SCORE International. Because of the impact of Ron Bishop in my life in 1971, I'd never met a coach like that. And I saw, man, here was a guy, loved life, you said it earlier, enjoyed his Christian life, and yet very competitive, very hard-nosed, and made an impact on my life and probably helped mold part of who I am today, for sure.
So not only was sports beneficial in your days and your playing career, high school, then, of course, on the collegiate campus, you're leaving the Bible College in 75 and coming back to Charlotte and coaching high school sports while I'm going on to that same Bible College campus. We attended the same location, but at different tenures. But as I was coming back during my visits, I enjoyed watching my brother play high school sports, and you were one of his coaches. Ooh. That was certainly formative. And so I got exposed to you 4 decades ago in 1978 as I came back and began to see my brother play those last 2 years of high school sports. What was it like at the high school level? We'll get into the collegiate level in a minute. You've had experiences at both levels, but at the high school level, a guy that's looking for another father figure, somebody to mentor him along the way, obviously multiple sports, but what was it like coaching back in the 70s with high school players?
Well, it was a lot different than it is today. I just today spent time with a guy that's coaching at North Mecca High School here in Charlotte, 22 years. We were talking about that. It's different today, coaching style. But back then, too, and we were in Christian schools. Jeff, you know this. I mean, we didn't have the facilities. Most Christian schools got pretty good facilities now, and praise the Lord for that. But we had the bare essentials. In fact, we had to build the gym. We had to redo the baseball field. I mean, it just wasn't, boy, you didn't have a lot. But I always took the philosophy, you got to take the cards you were dealt with and run with those. You know, as a coach, you can gripe and complain about what you don't have. And you've heard the saying, you can either become bitter or you can become better. I always took the approach, we're going to get better. There are always a couple of things I knew we could control. But those kids were pretty hard-nosed kids back then, even at Northside. I mean, they were hard-nosed. They worked hard. We tried to get them to compete. And that was the biggest thing. We didn't have all the talent. We had a few good players. It wasn't like we didn't have any talent. But those were tough days. We just didn't have a lot, and you had to make do. And I really think in coaching perspective, man, nowadays coaching is so different today. It wasn't like that back then. It was just the basic essentials, you know, how to hit, how to kick a ball, how to pass. But not, I don't think any of us were trained, and I know in college, I don't care where you went to college, you weren't trained the way they're trained today.
No AAU teams back in our era,
no,
was there? No off-season workouts. You had guys doing multiple sports.
Mm-hmm.
You and I recently had a chance to visit the father of one of our former athletes, John Thompson, and his father in a facility that requires 24/7 care. And his dad was also an integral part of our sports program because he prepared the trips for our buses to go out and transport our athletes from gym to gym and field to field. And so it was good to go back and visit Jack Thompson, a true servant of God. But we were talking about John Thompson. I well remember winning the 1980 soccer state championship. You gave a mantra to the team: you can achieve what you believe. And we were injury riddled. It had been a tough season, you know, around the 500 level against a tremendously top flight competition. But then coming to the state tournament, man, we caught fire, moved some players around, and some tremendous things happened. But I'll never forget John Thompson playing in the state championship soccer tournament. As I was taping his ankle as part of my pregame routine as the assistant coach, you know, there was no bone to be seen anywhere. That ankle was so puffy, it was even hard to imagine him walking on that. And there were tears of pain. But that guy went out there and played midfield and was a big integral part. Just him being a kind of like Willis Reed walking out of the locker room, the old New York Knicks, you know. They don't make Johnny Thompsons anymore. Mm. You don't have those kind of guys that, I remember the old sports writers, Grantland Rice of his era. You know, he gave a yeoman's effort. And John Thompson was such a kid to do that. Well, I'll never forget, Coach, when you moved on to the collegiate ranks, you went back to your alma mater and coached, and then on to a Christian college in California. And I took over as head coach after being an assistant coach under your tutelage. And I asked you a question: what is the difference between coaching college baseball versus high school baseball? And I don't know if you remember your answer, but you said, you know, we play Tuesdays and Fridays, occasionally a third game on a Saturday, maybe once a month,
mm-hmm.
but on the basis of a two-game schedule a week. In colleges, you're playing four and five times a week. And you said, you know what? Whatever happened yesterday, we got to move on to the next day. And it reminded me of a great sage of the faith who was on the campus with us, you in the early 70s, me in the middle 70s, Dr. Fred Brown. I've said this all across America, and men have resonated with this. I think men need to hear this. The Christian life is a series of new beginnings. And so, collegiate ranks, to play more games, we've got to move on. And the evil one wants to come steal, kill, and to destroy. And there's a new day. God, His mercies are new every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to encourage men and hear that.
Yeah.
And so that was a lesson practically. Yes, you were talking about my coaching standpoint. There's more games to play, more new opportunities, but there's also a parallel to the Christian lives. Speak about that for a little bit.
Very much so. I have a little devotion I like to share with men, Jeff. First of all, winning doesn't end. You know, it's not you win today doesn't mean you're going to win tomorrow. Nobody ever called me up in 31 years of coaching, hey, coach, we're not coming today because y'all beat so-and-so. No, that has never happened, never will. Winning's not the end of all things. The other thing, losing's not the end of the world. There is life after a loss. Just in the last 3 years, Jeff, I walked both my sons, they're 37, 40, walked them through divorce. And there is life. God didn't give up. God's never going to give up. You know, I believe Romans 8:38-39, nothing can separate me. I know I can disappoint God. And I know sometimes I do things that God has to chastise me. But He never gives up. And He doesn't turn His back on me. And the last thing I like to say, winning's not all, losing's not the end of the world, but you get nothing for nothing. That's exactly what you get. What you, that reaping principle, what you sow, you'll reap. That works in life, works in your marriage, works in your children, works in a lot of things. And spiritually, that principle is so true. And I believe it's even in men. Man, work hard. I don't know what your job is, but work hard. Show up every day. Got to carry your lunch pail every day. There's no great teams that win national championships or state championships. I guarantee it's because they worked hard and they saw a goal. And everybody, they didn't worry about all the wins. You know, you hear Nick Saban after an interview of a college football game in Alabama. Boy, he's always got something. And you got to keep working. But losing's not the end of the world. And even though Satan may defeat us, the Apostle Paul, you know, we got knocked down, but we don't get knocked out. Great job. Dr. Jack Hudson preached a great sermon about that once. You get knocked down, don't get knocked out. Get up, keep going. You might get knocked again, but you got to keep moving and keep your focus on God.
Tremendous. Well, let's talk a little baseball. You're a baseball guy, though. You've coached multiple sports, and it's your love for the game and obviously for the Yankees. But when you went back and you went to your alma mater and you were coaching in Chattanooga, there's a historic stadium there, Engel Stadium.
Yeah.
And my wife and I went out to see the movie 42 a couple years ago that came out, the life story of Jackie Robinson. Mm-hmm. And much of that movie was filmed in Engel Stadium to recall what it was like back in those days. Folks would come out to the ballpark in suits and ties and dressed to the kill. It was America's pastime. And you had guys like Jackie Robinson in the late 40s that came out there and obviously played a major social realm of breaking the color line. But what was about the sport of baseball? What drew you to that sport and made it such a love for the game?
Well, I think probably growing up in my little town, there was only one organized sport in my town in Pennsylvania. That was baseball. My dad played a lot of fast pitch softball. He coached us and did all those things. So that was the sport that I ran around with when I was a young guy, and just fell in love with it. I became a Yankee fan, and you know, I was going to be Mickey Mantle and I was going to do this and that, but reality struck in high school that wasn't going to happen. But I love the game. I think baseball is a game that still requires a team aspect to it. I think a lot of people miss that, because the clubhouse, especially in the pro level, that clubhouse is very important. Those 25 guys aren't together in that clubhouse, it's going to show up on the field. It happens all the time. So I love the game. I think the game, any sport, but especially baseball, there's so many life principles you can draw out. You know, if you hit 300 in baseball, you failed 7 times. You only were successful 3. How do you handle defeat? How do you handle failure? You play a lot, yeah, so you got to be able to forget, have a short memory. I once asked Mariano Rivera, I said, Mariano, how do you handle it when you're on the mound closing, guy takes you deep, you lose the game? He said, I've learned this. I've learned from the time I walk to the mound till I walk across the foul line, I think about, okay, where was that pitch? Where did I make the mistake? As soon as I walk across the foul line toward the dugout, I forget it, and I start preparing for the next day.
Hit that reset button.
Yes, buddy.
You know, research is also, I talked about sociology earlier, and it relates to ministry. And then research specialists have come up with something recently that I think is very intriguing, and it has a baseball parallel to men's discipleship. They looked at scriptural engagement, and they interviewed thousands of people all across America, including the guy that's going to be at a hotel tonight, and there's a Gideon Bible. Mm-hmm. So they're including those guys who are spiritually off course, not just those who are in solid evangelical churches, the ranks that we typically run in when we're not doing outreach. But they found that 4 out of 7 was the line in which spiritual growth was happening. In other words, to use a baseball analogy, you know, if I'm 0-7, obviously there's not any impact taking place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 1 out of 7, 2 out of 7, 3 out of 7, minimal impact. But at 4 out of 7, you know, scriptural engagement takes place 4 days out of the week, then significant growth begins to take place in my life. And I always tell guys this, Coach, none of us bat 1,000. Even leaders in ministry, there are days our soul runs dry. There are days when things consume us. In fact, I'm always one of these people that says, I'm not so sure you can schedule God. Let's let him schedule us. And so, but this 4 out of 7, I think about that from a baseball player, that'd be a tremendous batting average.
Yeah.
And so if 4 out of 7 is what research is indicating to us, guys shouldn't beat themselves up for, you know, when they're not 5 out of 7 or 6 out of 7 or 7 out of 7. We're constantly striving. Yes, let us go on to spiritual maturity. That is a theme in the New Testament. We're always longing for more of God, but none of us hit 1,000. Amen?
I mean, that's so true. And Jeff, I tell everybody, you know, you're a leader, spiritual leader of your ministry. I'm a spiritual leader of a ministry. I tell you, the hardest thing I do is read my Bible and pray. I mean, really have a intimate, quiet time with God. I can't strive enough to that. That's the hardest thing I do. Ministry in one aspect, I can do that, you know, but man, when it comes down to really spending time with God in an intimate relationship in the Word of God, and you're right, statistics prove it. We did a survey in my own church down in Tampa, and it's so true. We found out that probably 70% of our men in our church were not engaged more than 2 times a week. I mean, that's sad. And we have a church of 2,200. That's sad, 70%. So, you know, one of the things we did in our life group is we divided up into groups of three, and we hold each other accountable. We read that word that day, and then you have to text it to the other. There's four in my group. You got to text it to the other three. They text it to you. We're in Exodus chapter 4 today. Got to read that Exodus chapter 4. I send it done, you know, and that's so important. Accountability among men, nobody likes it, but it really is good.
So beyond scriptural engagement, which is the written word and its power in our lives, then also the living word. Mm-hmm. Just like we've been experiencing today, we had a chance to go break bread with another ministry leader. And to me, that is a connection point with God. And so going back to the 4 out of 7 on the average, to me, the other 3 days a week, you know, I'm always looking for some living word opportunities. Mm-hmm. Yesterday afternoon, I went to the drag strip with a guy and to begin to mentor him. That was the environment he chose to say, hey, would you come hang out with me? And so walking around the pit area, you know, seeing those powerful engines, you know, just an amazing thing to see these NHRA 10,000 horsepower dragsters. Amazing to see them go 330 miles an hour in a quarter mile. But what I'll take away is not what we observed at the race, though that was fun stuff to do. Just like you said, every guy should be a good guy, as well as his desire for godliness. But let's let God show up. Let's let God schedule us. The ministry leader today, he plays tons of golf. And those are ways for him to go out there and intermingle with people. We take guys down to Clemson, South Carolina, have a chance to be involved in the Saturday afternoon activities on the football field. And just some rewarding drive time, you know, conversations. And so there's multiple ways to connect with God. Obviously, scriptural engagement and biblical community being two of those. But, you know, a guy can find biblical community. He can find community with the Lions Club, but he can't find biblical community.
Right, and that's so important, Jeff. Having somebody you can walk with. I mean, here we are today. You know, you've been such an encourager. There's no question. If you said Paul, Timothy, Barnabas, you fit all three, but for sure, Barnabas, that encourager, and that encourages us to walk along. But I need that too. I you know, just because I'm a leader doesn't mean I can spend. I got to invest too, and I need that guy in my life, and I need that person to walk alongside of me, because all of us, to stand alone, Satan's too powerful, too strong.
Yeah, they're givers and takers in the economy of life, as somebody has spoken about, as we look back to the annals of Scripture. And Abraham was a giver, you know, Lot was a taker. But on the taking side, as far as us serving God, it's important for us, again, to have our batteries recharged. And so when you gave me a phone call a couple days ago and said, hey, I'm going to be in town this weekend, love to be able to connect on Saturday, and what a fantastic time to meet with another ministry leader. And I think we invested into his life, encouraged him. He shared that. Here we are spending time and getting caught up and sharing some insights. So if you guys out there listening, you know, maybe you're a leader of men and you're flying a solo in a duet world. Hey, it's important for you to gather others around you. If you go out there and just give away your entire life, you're going to get burnout. I found that true, that the average guy will get worn out if we minister him to death, and the leader will get burnout. Well, how do we avoid getting worn out? How do we avoid the burnout factor? And so having people who will recharge our lives, and again, based on chemistry, affinity, transparency. We do this Who's in Your Foxhole seminar across America, and we talk about those three elements. And so it's been great to have you in our life like that. Let's go back to the sport of baseball and tell some fun stuff, because again, we don't need to be holy Joes. We need to be regular Joes. Yeah. So we want to dive into the scriptures. We want to have a chance to break some bread together and get caught up. And you and I like to discuss ministry strategy like we used to do coaching strategy. Every time we get together, there's some aspect of our conversation we'll say, hey, what would you do in this situation? You know, it's like old Ron Polk, the great guy with the baseball Bible. Never forget you take me to his clinic and hearing what he had to say with the old 240 and 260 strategy with runners on base. And so we trade baseball cards like that with ministry strategy, but we want to invest in each other's lives. So when we talk about this regular Joe stuff, tell me about some of your experiences in the circuits. I know I've seen and heard about stories. You've traveled the country and visiting some major league parks. How many and what are some of the more significant ones that have stood out to you?
Well, I really am a diehard Yankee fan. Probably one of the best ones I remember. First game I ever went to was at Connie Mack Stadium in Philadelphia. Very unique stadium because in right center, there was a little, just a little thing, weird thing in the stadium. The ball would roll into the corner and you'd the outfielder would be gone. You wouldn't be able to see him. He'd come out and throw the ball. I remember doing that. It was neat. A few years ago, took my wife and boys and went to Wrigley Field, man. That's neat. Been to Fenway Park. Loved that. Walking around that, seeing that, the way it's been for all those years. I never got to the original Yankee Stadium, but I went to the old one before they tore it down several times, and then I've been to the new Yankee Stadium. Been around, been blessed. Dodger stadiums, now that's becoming an old park. So I've really enjoyed that part of it, just going to see the things. And then I really love being around the Christian athlete, especially the baseball player. I've had the privilege of doing chapel with and Bible studies with Mariano Rivera and Andy Pettit, Scott Brosius, Joe Girardi. Man, just a lot of different guys. It's been really cool. Daryl Strawberry, Doc Gooden, and that's been not a brag on me. I think it's God's blessing of just saying, hey, I'm gonna let you enjoy a few things with that, and then to get to know those guys and then talk to those guys, even baseball wise, it's been a blessing.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier at our chance to have a fellowship meal with this other ministry leader. And Proverbs 28:20, I really believe what that passage is talking about, describes what you've just shared. A faithful man will abound with blessings. Mm-hmm. I saw your faithfulness in ministering to guys like my brother as a high school coach. I had a chance to sit on the bench and be your third base coach and then take over for you as a head coach. So I've observed that firsthand. And so God's taking you to deeper heights and greater heights and deeper depths and giving you a chance to run in some circles that we never would have thought would have been that place. And it's not because we deserve it, but God's been faithful to reward us because we desire more of Him. Another name I'll toss out is your annual golf tournament in the Tampa area, Four Score International, going back to your role as executive director. Lou Piniella heads that up for you. Tell us about your relationship with Lou, the famous baseball manager.
I got to know him when I was still coaching high school in 1994 in Tampa, actually 95. He came and did a clinic for us. And actually he, Kevin Malone, Brian Butterfield, who's with the Cubs now, he came and some other high school coaches in the area. We just did a clinic for kids, had about 80 kids. And that's the first time I had met Lou. And Lou had just professed Christ back then. He was very raw. But I tell you, he was an amazing hitting guy. I mean, people see him just as a guy that went out there, stomped around. And some of that was staged a little bit because they had to sell tickets. And every time Lou got put out of a game, ticket sales went up. So don't forget there is a business side to it. But Lou, as we've come along, we've done some Bible studies together, and it's been a joy to watch him grow in his faith, and be his wife is a godly lady. And so a few years ago, I had an idea, hey, you gotta, especially being in Tampa, you have a lot of pro athletes there. But I said, you know, I need a guy's name. So I called Lou up, said, Lou, would you be interested in helping me raise some funds for SCORE, the ministry I'm with? And if I could use your name for a golf tournament. He said, okay. So we went to this really bad golf course. After the first day, during the tournament that day, he said, hey, how much money you want to make? And I said, well, I'd like to make 60, 80,000 back then. This was probably 2008, 9, somewhere. He said, we ain't going to do it here at this golf course. So let me do it. If you want to make some money, let me do it somewhere else. And we went to his home private club, Avila, which nobody can get on, but because he's a member. So he's been doing it for a while. And, boy, I've been really blessed by that. We probably have raised, $750,000, $1 million in the last 6, 7, 8 years. So it's always good to have him. And he's a very gracious and kind guy.
Well, it's great to have connections like that and to people that are high profile, but the ground's level at the foot of the cross. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times we have a chance to see God work in and through people like that very amazingly. And a number of these players you've had a chance to do some chapels with and interact with, they've obviously been involved with SCORE International on some of your trips. Another thing I'll never forget you telling me one time, your efforts in the Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. And I asked you, I said, hey, what is it like for those kids that are growing up? You know, we talked about you playing in the state of Pennsylvania because that was your major sport. You know, we had Little League baseball when I was growing up, but man, those guys talking about, you know, the need for equipment and facilities, man, they're just in scramble mode. But you told me that is their one ticket off that island is to try to get to the big leagues. Yeah. And that's their one quest, because that's the ultimate pot of goal. Tell us about what it's like for some of those kids and how y'all go and minister to them and give them a higher goal.
Yeah, in the Dominican Republic, if you're a boy, then you're a potential baseball player. And I do baseball chapel with the Tampa Yankees, been their chaplain for 22 years. But the point of that is you see a lot of Latin kids, and you see more and more of them because those kids are hungry. The average Dominican boy probably only eats every other day. He only gets meat once in a while, maybe once a week if he's lucky, and only a small thing. You go into these villages, man, it's just poverty, really poverty. And it's hard to believe that there's people in the world. Now, I know we've seen pictures of other countries, but very poor. So a boy plays baseball. He won't go to school because if he can get that contract, even that minor league contract at age 16 or 15, 10 months, something like that, then his whole family's going to eat as a result of his efforts. So they play every day, all day. They just play. They play with a stick, broken bat, a ball made of socks compressed together, held together by tape. They don't have all the things that the average kid has today playing travel baseball and everything, but the one thing they have is motivation, and that motivation is I got to eat. I signed that contract, I'm going to eat three times a day instead of once a day. I signed that contract, my dad and mom get to eat, my brothers and sisters get to eat. So it's very high motivating. They have a saying on the island, you don't walk off the island, you hit your way off the island.
Mm.
So that's why you see a Dominican kid, man. You don't have to worry about bat speed with those guys. That bat head flies through that hitting zone, and it's their life. Now, the sad part is, we talk about a life of a man. What's the value, and how do you define life? They only see it through the eyes of food, where we see it through the eyes of eternity.
What would be a typical mission trip experience? Somebody signs up on the website you gave us earlier, scoreintl.org, having a chance to go and, hey, this is something I'd be excited about. I love baseball. I want to see people reach for Christ. So this is kind of my ticket to go off and do something. I know Score is a more comprehensive effort than only the trips to the DR. But what would be a typical mission trip experience? Kind of walk us through there from the time they land to what they'll experience during the week.
Yeah, we'll the typical day, let's say, Coach, you bring your baseball team down. You're going to land that day, that afternoon. We're going to get you situated. We may even go out to a village and do a clinic that night. Then the next day, we're going to get up, play a game. That afternoon, probably going to take you to an orphanage and let you see some kids that had, if it wouldn't be for this orphanage, they're not even getting any food. We might take you to a senior adult home. There are no rest homes in the Dominican Republic, but we can take you to home and let you minister to senior adults that just were left and abandoned, and that we run in a village. And then one day we're going to take you to, you're going to play a game and share the gospel after the game. You're going to come eat lunch. We're going to take you to a girls' home where the 40-some girls are there. Pasitos de Jesus is the feet of Jesus, is the interpretation of the title. And you're going to see girls, half of them physically abused, half of them sexually abused girls that were just abandoned. Because a girl has no shot in Dominican. A boy, he's an investment. He can be a baseball player.
It's a patriarchal society.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And the girls, they're just produce babies, and that's it. They got no value. And so we will do that. We'll also pass out food, clothing, do humanitarian things. And I tell you, it really is. You got to understand, on a trip like that, the benefit is, man, you see people who are really hungry. I mean, they're physically hungry. They've got no hope. They're living in poverty. It'll change your life. It'll change how you look at life.
You've also had some D1 basketball coaches go with you on some of these trips, and there's been some big impact made on those fellas. Who are you at liberty to share with about those guys that have traveled with you?
Well, we've taken John Calipari on a trip. A lot of people we weren't allowed to share with that, but he went down. We took him to Haiti and set up. He passed out over 1,000 shoes of Nike shoes. A few years ago, we had the privilege to take Urban Meyer. He brought his whole family down and went on a trip. Again, I didn't want to broadcast that because that's what not it was. A funny story about that one. We went into the first village and we pull up. We're going to pass out some food, and plus he was going to walk through the village, and they had some clothing and things. And we work through our local church plants. We've planted about 25 churches now, and so we know where these church plants are to enhance the people. But he, before he got out of the van, he said, whoa, I can't just walk out here. And we told him, hey, we're going to assure you, Coach, they don't know who you are. And he didn't. And he ended up loving the trip because he could just walk freely. Nobody knew who he was.
Totally anonymous.
Had the privilege of taking Mariano Rivera through some private villages, Andy Pettit, taking his family. He's taken a couple of, like, about three family trips because it's just a good thing to, first of all, we all are commissioned Matthew 28:19. We got to get the gospel out where we live. We got to get it out in our region, but we also have a command to get it to the world. And this is a way you can do that. So that's been a joy to see the men like that and how much they've been touched. Nelson Cruz, the great player now at the end of his career playing with the Mariners. I can remember him just crying. We took him into a village, even though he grew up in the Dominican, but took him into a village and he just wept. I mean, he just couldn't believe how bad it was.
Well, Coach, as we round third base and head towards home on this podcast today, really appreciate your intentionality all along the way, every chapter in your life that I've observed. And what I've really appreciated about you is you've invited us to continually allow to make an investment in your world. Mm-hmm. And that's just been very rewarding to me. But let's think about, again, that leader earlier today that we talked about that's kind of struggling. He's in isolation. He didn't have an assistant coach to come alongside and help him prepare the team to excel. And so until he can find somebody out there, you know, this may be the last shot he has to say, well, after this particular season, we're taping this podcast in the fall of the year. Hey, once we get to Christmas time, I'm ready to hang the cleats up. You know, I've kind of done my duty because, as Pat Morley says, it takes a long time to make a male disciple. In fact, he would encourage leaders, and I was being mentored by him, if you're not being willing to give 10 years to this, a full decade, if he's willing to play one season and kind of get in and get out, that's going to be a minimal impact. Just like the mission trip experience, I'm sure you guys are longing for, hey, what is the future benefits? We just don't go and hit the time clock. Hey, I did a mission trip. Now I can move on. God's pleased with me. Right. There's got to be ripple effects coming out of that. So that guy who may be listening today that's drawn in by the baseball stories, and in a minute I'm going to ask you your all-time starting nine for the Yankees that people will enjoy hearing. Let's run through a couple of questions here and get some short answers as far as words of wisdom. What about to the leader that really needs to become an avid reader? We talked about scriptural engagement, but there are also some good volumes out there on leadership, on discipleship, things that can help a guy. What is a book that you've read during your life that has been beneficial?
Well, one book that I just got done recently with, probably within the last couple of years, is a book written by a famous basketball coach, Mike Jarvis, Coach Patrick Ewing in high school, St. John's. He wrote a book, Every Man Needs a Head Coach, and it's 23 biblical principles for men to live by. And I tell you what, I would encourage any man, any leader, to read that. It's great. It's good biblical, solid biblical basis, but that's one book I highly, highly recommend.
Good stuff. As far as impact players, you've made an intentional impact on so many lives, but who has impacted you? Who was a key mentor either growing up or doing your call to ministry or even during these adult years of life? Who's been a mentor in your life you'd like to highlight?
Well, one guy right now that's had an impact in my life is Al Cockrell. Al Cockrell was head of ABWE, the chapel in Buffalo, New York. Met him in Tampa in 1994, had a real impact in my life. And he's a good man. He worked for John Maxwell for many years. So he's a guy that has really impacted me a lot. Ron Bishop, what I'm doing now. When I met him in 1971 as a coach that was coaching me, that had a huge impact in my life. Coach, you and I both had the impact. You see a man like a Jack Hudson that was just had so many physical ailments, but he kept going. Never quit. And you look at those men, 3 years I spent with John MacArthur. I didn't go to seminary. I have a master's degree in sports management. But, man, John MacArthur, working alongside of him personally for 3 years, that was like seminary. And very impressed with him. So Ken Whitten, Ida Wild pastor in Tampa, a huge influence. I've had the privilege of working for some good people and even coaching back at Temple with Dr. Robertson. And seeing his leadership, strong leadership, those men had a lot of impact.
Speaking of Lee Robertson, Dabo Swinney quoted his famous line at our national championship celebration a couple years ago. Everything rises and falls on leadership. A Temple grad, in fact, that's who we was having lunch with today, Tony Eubanks, former Ole Miss player, transferred in to finish out his playing career at Tennessee Temple in Chattanooga. As his chaplaincy for the Clemson Tigers during the Tommy Bowden era, he passed along to that wide receivers coach, Dabo Swinney, that famous quote, "Everything rises and falls in leadership." For me to sit out there and to hear that quote at the national championship celebration was fantastic. And when you think about leadership, you know, how is leadership defined for you? How do you want to see it played out with you overseeing your staff at SCORE, the impact they can make in people's lives?
One of the things I learned from John MacArthur is true leadership is servant leadership. And you got to be willing to serve. If you're not willing to serve, I don't think you can have a real impact. And even in our coaching, Jeff, you and I both know, facility, we're very nice. We're going to make the best of the facility we had. Try to put the kids in the best uniforms, give them the best opportunities and to play, and try to coach them up to, so that we can engage in situations they get involved in. But you got to be willing to be a servant. And I saw that. I'll give you this classic example. When I moved from Chattanooga, Tennessee Temple to the Master's College, I'm pulling a big Ryder truck, U-Haul filled with all my stuff, pulling a trailer behind it, and we're going out to California, and I pull in there on a Friday night about 12 o'clock, and I got to get up and move into my apartment that morning at 8 o'clock, and there's John MacArthur, helped me unload my trailer and truck all day, got me in my apartment. When I saw that, of who he was and what how he displayed leadership, that pretty well defines it and ends it right there.
All those behind-the-scenes efforts like that really tell the true meaning of a man's impact. Mm-hmm. Well, even we as leaders go through valley moments. Maybe there's a guy listening right now. Pat Morley writes about the seven seasons in a man's life, and one of those seasons is the season of suffering. Mm-hmm. It could be the current season you find yourself in as you battle cancer or something in your past. But when you went through a valley moment, tell about a time God proved himself faithful during a crisis.
Yeah, I'll tell you this, and it's probably a time when God broke me while I was coaching at Master's College. I made a mistake, and I played an ineligible player, not intentionally to try to beat somebody. In fact, we were getting beat so bad, the other coach, it was an NCAA Division I coach, said, "Hey, Coach Zeller, play your mutes kid," because he couldn't play. He was ineligible. He said, "Nobody's going to say anything about it. Just put him in there and pitch two innings." We were getting beat 17-1. I was just trying to keep a game because they weren't allowed to stop the game. They had to play all nine innings. I had nobody. I mean, nobody could pitch. And he said, "Put the mutes kid in." And he was well-known. He transferred in from the University of Hawaii. He was a well-known player. I said, "Well, he's not eligible." He said, "Don't worry about it. Put a uniform on him. We just got to finish this game." And sure enough, he came in. Well, he was lights out. He shut him down eighth, ninth inning. What happened was there was a kid on the team that really had a hard time with it. He thought it was an ethical breakdown of my who I was. And it was. I should have never played him. But, you know, I'm trying to – a lot of times we make mistakes with our hearts. It gets us in trouble, you know. And anyway – ended up, we got on probation. God took me through that. And that was hard because it was almost an integrity. It was an integrity character issue. And God had to break me. And I'll tell you, he got me through that, changed my life a lot. And also say to this to John MacArthur, he was stood beside me. And he wasn't pleased but when it came out. But you know what? We walked through that, and God took that, and that was a major thing in my life. I think it really, really strengthened me, broke me, but strengthened me, and I found God's grace and blessing thereafter, too.
Situational ethics is what some people would describe what you were placed in front of you. And again, you weren't taking the initiative, but you were given an invitation, and you walked through that door. And then, of course, that was a door of regret later on. But it reminds us that the Christian life is a series of new beginnings. Another example of a servant leader staying in your corner. Yeah. Hey, let's learn from the situation, you know. And like you told me about coaching college versus high school, hey, tomorrow's another day, you know. There's nobody on. There's no errors. Let's move forward and learn from that situation. And so that's a great example. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there that have picked up on these Yankee stories. And so I like to ask this of people who are avid baseball fans. And so give me your all-time starting nine. Go around the diamond. and then the outfield, and then your two starting pitchers, right and left-handed.
All right. Well, let's see. I'm going to start first base. I liked a lot of guys. I'm going to stay with Tino Martinez. He won a lot of games. He wasn't probably the greatest first baseman. He wasn't the showiest first baseman. Boy, he was tough. Second base, I tell you, I heard a lot of guys went through there. I'm going to go with Bobby Richardson. Bobby was tough. Shortstop, man, there's no question. You got to go with Derek. Third base, man, that's a tough one. There are a lot of guys, but there's a guy that really won some games because he was a stand-up guy with Scott Brosius. I mean, Scott was a great third baseman, solid defensively. Outfield, that's where it gets tough. I mean, you got a Lou Piniella, who was a lifetime 300 hitter. They won in 77-78. Reggie Jackson, you can't deny him. Hey, Paul O'Neill, look at those career. I don't know if I could limit the outfield to three guys.
Your childhood hero, Mickey Mantle.
Oh, Mickey Mantle. I haven't even talked about that. Mantle, I mean.
DiMaggio.
Ruth. I mean, I don't even know where you go with all that. Catcher, I tell you, the guy, I mean, Jorge Posada was good, but I tell you what, I don't think we saw all of Thurman Munson. I'm going to go with Munson behind the plate. Left and right-hand pitcher, man, I tell you, I'm a big Andy Pettit guy. I know Whitey Ford was tough, but Pettit was good. Right-handed pitcher, man, that's another tough one. But I tell you, a guy that really made an impact with the Yankees, I thought, Catfish Hunter. He changed that game around. So, you know, he wasn't homegrown Yankee, but I'm going to go with that. And then there's so many guys you've left off. You got to go with the bullpen. Mariano Rivera, I'm going to put the save guy in there. He was tough.
Who would manage your squad?
Boy, I tell you what, I am not a big Joe Torre guy. I like Torre. I'm going to stay with Ralph Hawk. I think Ralph Hawk was a steady guy. Casey Stengel was a great manager. There were other guys there too, but I'm going to go with Ralph Hawk.
He had Mel Stottlemyre in his pitching routine, so I well remember those days.
And Mel, there's another good right-hander
yep,
right there,
yep,
boy.
Yep.
At the time, he was one of the youngest kids to ever win a World Series game.
That's kind of the ultimate question, I think, as far as, you can take the 27 Yankees.
Yeah.
I well remember there was a theme park down in Central Florida called Boardwalk Baseball that had a traveling exhibit from the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown.
Yeah.
And they had some lockers from the 1927 Yankees. And I thought, wow, what would it have been like to walk into that locker room? And there's Ruth and Gehrig. In fact, you know, some sports historians remember this, but not these younger sports fans. They're not into sports history.
Mm-hmm.
But the numerals on the baseball jerseys started with the Yankees with that 27 run. And they went by the order in the lineup. Therefore, Ruth hit third and Gehrig hit fourth. And so, therefore, that became their numerals. So, let me give you a little trivia question here now.
Okay.
See if you can come up with this. So, I like to ask my Yankee fans this. So give me 1 through 9. Obviously, players have worn multiple numerals over the years, but a lot of classics. So, try with number 1 and go through number 9. Tell me how many Yankees you can name with their famous uniform numbers.
All right, let's see. One was, Richardson, I believe. He was two. He was two?
Yogi Berra was number 1.
Oh, well, okay. 1 was Yogi. 2 was Richardson. 3, you already named it. You talking about retired?
All-time Yankees, yeah.
Oh, man. 3, you got to go with Ruth.
Yep.
4 with Gehrig. What is 5? DiMaggio?
DiMaggio's 5.
6.
One of Mickey Mantle's teammates.
Roger Maris.
Bingo.
7, Mantle. 8, I thought 8 was Bearer.
That's right, I'm sorry. Yeah, 8 is Yogi Berra. Number 1 was Billy Martin.
Billy Martin,
yeah.
That's right. I said Bobby Richardson. 9 is, 9 is Maris, wasn't he?
No.
I thought he was 9.
Okay, maybe he was 9, yeah.
10, oh, man, now you got me on that. I don't know. Where does Munson come in?
He comes in there pretty close to that level, too.
Where does Reggie Jackson come in at 10?
Yeah, 44. Yeah, exactly.
844. Yeah. I don't know who 10 is.
Yeah. Well, 1 through 9 gives us a little bit of a background.
Yeah, there
like
we
that.
Go.
So that's a good trivia question for you Yankee fans out there.
Yeah.
You can ask those of other people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of I'll change it over to your famous opponents. and the rivalry, what some people call one of the greatest rivalries in sports, the Red Sox. I'll never forget, in the early 1990s, the Red Sox were still training in Winter Haven, Florida, mm-hmm. where I was serving at the time, and they eventually went on to Fort Myers because Roger Clemens didn't like the mound. The groundskeeper didn't do a good job, so he wanted to go to a new place. But I'll never forget, they'd bring back some of those old Hall of Famers like the other sports teams would do during spring training. And Yastrzemski was out there as a hitting coach for some of these minor leaguers. Then once the game started that was being played there at Channel Lake Stadium, I heard the crack of the bat down there in the batting cage, and I thought, who's down there? Went and checked it out. There was Yastrzemski himself out there still taking cuts. You know, it's hard for guys to walk away mm-hmm. when they get to that level because there's still something about the swing of the bat mm-hmm. and getting those pitches received that, yes, I can teach and pass this on to others, but to play that along. Well, you're still taking your cuts, Coach. You're still finishing well in your life. And so it's been an honor to have you on the Intentional Way today. And any final words of encouragement you want to share with leaders listening in on the podcast?
Well, I just say, one, don't quit. I mean, just stay strong. Sun's going to rise. I used to say it all the time as a coach, you know, especially after defeat. Hey, sun comes up in the east, sinks in the west every day. Some days you can't see it, it gets cloudy. But I'm going to tell you something, that sun's going up and down. So we just hang in there and keep striving. And someday, you know, when Jesus said in John 14:6, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. I think a lot of times we think life means, okay, that's eternal life. And I know that was part of it. But I'll tell you the other thing, you can have life here on this earth. And life doesn't quit when there's a divorce. Life doesn't quit when there's a death. Life doesn't quit when there's a tragic accident. I mean, it just doesn't quit. Life goes on, and God is there to meet us. And wherever you're at, how dark it may be, let me tell you, that sun's going to shine someday.
Reminds me of what the psalmist says, from the rising of the sun to the going down of the same, the name of the Lord's is to be praised.
Amen.
Well, listen, once again, the website for folks to follow up is Score International.
www.scoreintl, short for international, .org, scoreintel.org.
Score International, sharing Christ, our Redeemer Enterprises. Mm-hmm. It's been great to have Coach John Zeller, a Foxhole friend, a ministry leader, executive director of Score International, for joining us today on another edition of Insights on Intentionality. We'll look forward to our next occasion to share additional insights. Be reminded of this. Ephesians 5:16 says, make the most of every opportunity. And I've certainly seen that in the life of my good friend, John Zeller. And remember this. Most people have good intentions, but few people practice intentionality. This is Coach K. We'll catch you next time on the podcast, Insights on Intentionality.